Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Foo followers around the world. Welcome to episode 72 of the Kung Fu Movie Guy podcast with your host, Ben Johnson. That is me. Hello. Welcome to the show. This month, we have teamed up with Eureka Entertainment here in the UK to give away three copies of the 1980 Sammo Hung supernatural kung fu classic Encounter of the Spooky Kind. The film is available now for the first time on Blu-ray here in the UK from a brand new 2K restoration. To be in with a chance of winning a copy, simply sign up to our newsletter at kungfumovieguide.com. Full competition details will be announced when we send out our next newsletter, which will be on the 30th of June, so that's this Wednesday. So become a registered Foo follower today and you could win yourself a free copy of the amazing Encounter of the Spooky Kind on Blu-ray. If you do sign up, then thank you so much and good luck. Encounter of the Spooky Kind is available to buy right now. You can head over to amazon.co.uk and eurekavideo.co.uk to purchase your copy. Okay, we have a great guest on today's show. The one and only Cynthia Rothrock is here. A huge guest and a great conversation. So without any further ado, let's get on with the show. Here we go.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, hello, hello there, Foo followers around the world, wherever you are listening to this. Thank you so much for checking it out. I do hope that you're doing well. I hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Ben Johnson here, the host of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, speaking to you now from a surprisingly sunny London here in the UK. We are in the summertime here now, so we have been getting some pretty nice sunshine of late. Look, you don't care about the weather. Cynthia Rothrock is here. She is on the show today, the queen of martial arts movies. We spoke on Zoom earlier in the year in March 2021, and soon I will play you that conversation. It is a fascinating chat, if I do say so myself, and it takes in quite a wide range of topics. Her journey from Scranton, Pennsylvania to starring in some of the best Hong Kong action films of the 1980s, movies like Righting Wrongs, Millionaire's Express, Yes Madam, that's called Police Assassins here in the UK, Magic Crystal, No Retreat, No Surrender 2. My God, there's so many great Cynthia Rothrock films. After her stint in Hong Kong, she then moved back to the USA to become a hugely bankable star in the straight-to-video market in the 1990s. Cynthia is now 64 years young. She remains a hugely popular and influential figure within the martial arts world. She's still training all the time. She travels the world. She's teaching seminars and she's still there making her fair share of action movies as well. So it was an absolute delight to spend a bit of time chatting with the one and only Cynthia Rothrock. It is coming up on today's show. Just before I throw over to that, I do get the sense that we may have a few new people joining us today for the first time. If that is the case, then welcome to the show. We've been doing this for a little while now, 5 years actually. The Kung Fu Movie Guy podcast started in 2016. This is the seventh episode in our sixth season of podcasts, and we are currently releasing new episodes every 2 weeks on a Monday. On this show, we celebrate martial arts movies and the people who make them. And over the years, I have spoken to many of the leading lights from the genre. You can listen back to all of our previous episodes right now via our website, kungfumovieguide.com. We are also available from all the usual places that you get your podcasts. The website is also the best place to go to read all of the latest martial arts movie reviews. You can also sign up to the newsletter, find our contact information. You can also donate to the Kung Fu Movie Guide. Any donation is greatly received. So the direct link to that is paypal.me/Kung Fu Movie Guide. If you have any questions at all about the show or the website, or if you just want to get something off your chest, or you just want to drop me a note, then there are many ways to do so. We are on Twitter at KF Movie Guide. We are also on Facebook and Instagram at Kung Fu Movie Guide. We're on YouTube as well. I think if you just search for Kung Fu Movie Guide, then we should come up in YouTube as well. And we have our email address. The email address is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, so it's Cynthia Rothrock time. As you'll hear in this conversation, I have talked to Cynthia in the past. She's not been on this podcast before, but I did interview her a decade ago for a different website. That interview is still available on kungfumovieguide.com. I will be sure to put a link to that article in this podcast description. When we spoke back in March of this year, 2021, it was still locked down in California and also here in the UK. Cynthia is very active online. You can find all the latest Cynthia Rothrock information via her website, cynthiarothrockofficial.com. She is on Instagram under the name Official Cynthia Rothrock. She is on Facebook, facebook.com/Cynthia Rothrock. She is also on Twitter at Cynroth, so that's Cynroth. And if you're a Cynthia Rothrock fan, then you do have to check out her YouTube channel. There's loads of great stuff on there, including videos of her many travels, the interviews that she's done. There are training videos, and there's also these great interviews where she breaks down a lot of the action scenes that she's been involved in over the years. So I will be sure to put a link to her YouTube channel in the description of this episode so you can reach it there. But otherwise, you can just go to youtube.com/Cynthia Rothrock channel. Okay, I will be back at the end of this conversation to sign off properly. But until then, here we go then. Here is my conversation with the undisputed queen of martial arts movies. It's the one and only Cynthia Rothrock. How are you coping with all this lockdown stuff?
The beginning, I was going crazy. It was like, oh, yeah. God, what do we do? You know, and I just started for the first, I would say, 6 months of it. I started really working out hard in my home, you know, because California here, we couldn't even like go outside. So yeah. I was just like, you know, doing the Peloton, and I was getting my weights out and just trying to like do yoga online and, you know, doing things like that. And then when things started lifting a little bit, then I started going out hiking, doing a little more hiking. And then when things started lifting a little bit again, I started learning how to scuba dive because I was like, hey, that's open and I've always wanted to do it.
Sure.
So I did that. And then I ended up going to Roatan because that was one of the few places you could get into. Yep. And got my advanced diving there. And then I went to Aruba because it seems like the Caribbean is probably one of the few places that we could have went to.
On your YouTube channel, you do record and film a lot of your travels. You've been all over the world, so that's amazing. I wondered if you've got a favorite place that you've been to.
Oh, that's really, really a tough one. But I would say Antarctica has to be probably my favorite.
You don't mind the cold?
I do. I don't like it, but I've got the warmest jacket that I could find.
Good.
When I went, it wasn't that bad. The worst part of it, because, you know, we were doing a lot of trekking. We were doing a lot of mountaineering, you know, a lot of hiking around the mountains. So when you're out there, no matter how cold it is, when you're moving like briskly and you're like climbing up hills, you tend to get warm. But it was the coldest I've ever been in my life standing on the front of the ship, you know, because you're going and you want to see like all the icebergs and what's going through.
Yeah.
And that was that unbelievably cold. I'd never experienced that kind of cold.
Have you always had this in you then, this sense of exploration and discovering the world and just sort of jumping in and getting involved? You've always had that in you then, haven't you?
No, you know what? Because when I was doing... When I started martial arts when I was a kid, and very shortly after that, I would say probably within a year and a half, I really started getting into competition very strongly. And then I started competing professionally. So all I really focused on for probably up until, I would say, until I had my daughter, you know, I really, which was in 99, I really focused on martial arts, you know, and filming. And I really didn't kind of vary away from that. And then after I had my daughter, you know, I took some time off and we started traveling with her. And then she turned 16 and really didn't want to travel with mom. And then my trips changed. It was like solo trips and adventure trips. And I think at that point, that's when I really, really said, wow, I love this extreme adventure, you know? And then I focused kind of on sports and, you know, treks that really challenged me. So I guess, you know, the competition challenged me to be the best I could be always. And then the extreme adventure challenged me to face my fears, because I have like a fear of heights and I do all these crazy things like bungee jumping, you know, and jumping off buildings and rappelling down waterfalls. So I think I just channeled that adrenaline junkie in me into doing these kind of trips.
What's on the bucket list still then, Cynthia? I mean, have you climbed like a mountain, one of the really big ones?
I did. I did the Everest Base Camp. I did.
Wow.
I did Mount Fuji. I did the Inca Trail. I did Patagonia, the W Trek. And actually, I was scheduled in June to do the Dolomites, which is going across the Alps from Italy to Switzerland. And that got canceled. So now it's put off until September. I think I've done pretty much all of them except Kilimanjaro. So I guess that, as far as trekking goes, is on my list. But I have to tell you, when I did Everest Base Camp, that was up over 19,000 elevation. The altitude really kicked my butt. And that was probably one of the most challenging things I've ever done, is do that, because every single day we were trekking 10 to 12 hours, most all uphill, mostly.
Cynthia, the last time, well, we didn't speak last time, we did a sort of email interview, but I read that back and that was 10 years ago, which is crazy.
Wow.
At that stage, you were just coming back into the film industry. I think Skylar was maybe a teenager by that point. You mentioned in there that she was looking to get into acting. She wanted to move to New York. I just wondered if she, has she pursued acting? Is that been something that she followed in the end?
No, actually she did not.
Are you relieved of that?
yes I am. I mean, now you know, still people will call me and they'll say, hey, you know, will your daughter like to be in this movie, you know? And he's kind of like, well, no, I gotta do this. And then when COVID hit, she got offered like two roles just because she was my daughter. And I'm like, go ahead, do it. You'll make some money.
Yeah.
Didn't want to because of COVID. She was really nervous about it. But she's actually in college now and she's studying psychology. And she's kind of changed her version, you know, of life, that she wants to do something where she can help people. people, and I love that. So yeah. I'm actually very proud of her, and I'm glad that she did take this route, because acting is very not a business that's consistent.
Would you have been more concerned if she followed the acting path or a fighting path?
You know what? She does know martial arts, and she knows enough of self-defense and a lot about awareness, because I, you know, instilled that into her since she was little. But I always thought, you know, when I had a daughter, that they would be a mini me. They would be like competing in martial art competitions, yeah, and, you know, following my route. And it didn't happen. You know, she had her own plan. And, you know, as a parent, you can't force what you would like them to do on them. So, but yeah, I thought, you know, that she would be like me, but it didn't turn out that path.
You have kept quite busy over the last 10 years. I know you've worked with Don Wilson a fair bit on a few projects. When you approach a new film project nowadays, I mean, what are the sorts of things you're looking for out of the films that you make now, would you say?
Well, you know, before, when I was doing movies, it was like my life. That's what I was doing. And then, you know, I stopped when I had my daughter. So I took probably, I think in like maybe 12 years, I might have done like just two or three films. And that was at the peak of my career. And then when I started to get back into it, it was kind of like it wasn't the same thing. The whole action industry changed. They weren't doing as many, you know, especially the movies I did with independent film companies. They weren't even around. So it was kind of hard to get back into it. So then I just decided, you know, I was going to do seminars and travel around the world of martial arts events. And that's what I was doing. And then the movie industry started picking up again. And then I started getting calls to do movies. So I've done, I'd say probably in the last 10 years, maybe 8 movies, you know. Yeah. I have a couple slated for once, you know, COVID is over and everybody gets into normal production. I have a couple for that. Yeah. But now it's kind of like I look at it differently. I look at it like it's something I love to do, and it's a fun thing for me to do. I just like turned down a project that I didn't want to do because I didn't feel it was right for me. So it's almost kind of like I can pick and choose. And now it's not so much like about before it was like a financial thing, you know. Now it's kind of oh yeah, I could do that for this. You know, some pay you high, some pay you low. It just depends on the project, you know, what it is. And basically just a good character part. And
So it is still the parts that you're attracted to, good scripts, that kind of thing, and good people as well. You know, you don't want to be hanging around with jerks, I guess.
Yeah, well, not, you know, what? I've been lucky. I've never really had, I can't really say I've had bad productions, you know, and people I didn't like working with. I've been pretty lucky on that. And I think it's more just basically, you know, the script and what the part is. And And you know, that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to do things that are different, you know, that's something that's totally different than I haven't done. And one of the things I'm doing right now, and actually I think that thanks to, you know, being at home, we were able to focus on this more, is I've always wanted to, with Marlon Shoup, who is an expert comic book, he draws like all the characters, and we've been talking about doing a comic book together, and finally we decided we're just gonna, you know, do it now. And we got Gail Simone, who is probably the best, you know, in my opinion, writers, especially for female characters. So she's gonna write it, and she's like huge. She's like, you know, the Cynthia Rothrock in the martial art world, the Gail Simone comic book world. So we're in the process of putting that together, and we're going to do, our plan is, I guess, to do an 80-page graphic novel, and then hope here maybe we could turn it into a movie. And we're kind of thinking a little bit of like putting in elements of my life for real, you know. And it's funny because when she talks about it, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, I have done things that comic book people could do, you know. It's not like, you know, like some of the places I've been, some of the things I've done. So I'm really excited about that project.
Is there plans to write an autobiography or a memoir or just something to get a lot of these stories down? I mean, you know, it's been an extraordinary life, hasn't it, Cynthia? You know, it's... you know, some incredible stories there. Would you think you would do that, write an autobiography or something?
Absolutely. You know, I've actually, when I was pregnant with my daughter, I thought, I'm going to write my book then, because I can't really go out and do all the crazy things I was doing. So I'm going to write my book. And then I'd sit at the computer and I'd type, and I'd get morning sickness or afternoon or evening sickness from it. And I couldn't type. I just couldn't do it. So then a couple years later, I said, I'm going to do it again. And I went and I said, I'm going to do what writers do. I'm going to go to Palm Springs and I'm going to lock myself up in a hotel room for like 4 days. And I'm just going to write. So I did that for 2 days. On the third day, I was like, oh, I gotta go get a massage. And then the next day I'm gonna go swimming in the pool. So I attempted it, but it never happened. And now I've had various people, writers, really good writers, you know, say, hey, you know, I'd like to write your story. So it is definitely in the works. I just got to get my mind down to do it. And one of the things I want to do from it is do a documentary also to coincide with it, because I think it would be interesting. I've watched a lot of documentaries, and I think from a you know, not just being a woman, but the trials and tribulations of going through, you know, competing in men's division, being the first woman on the cover of a magazine, you know, overcoming barriers and obstacles and, you know, to movies, to adventure, to spirituality. I think, and I am really kind of a quirky person, and I like to play jokes on people, and I like to laugh. Yeah. And I think it would also be very humorous. So I think, you know, that definitely is in the making as well.
Abbott, you better give up.
This notion of you being a role model, being something of a kind of a feminist icon in a way. I love the fact that your birthday is on the same day as International Women's Day, by the way.
I know, how about that, right?
It's amazing, yeah. I mean, that couldn't have fallen better, really. But because you're right, you were a trailblazer in many ways, not just in the film world, but in the martial arts world as well. I just wonder, how do you feel about that sort of being described in those terms?
You know, I'm honored that I paved the way for a lot of women. I get a lot of women that are in stunts and starting up in martial art movies and say, you know, because of you, you opened the doors, we could do that. One of the things that I'm really, really proud of, and it's kind of like I see as a legacy of my life, that I think through my movies, I have brought a lot of people into martial arts to study it. I've got a lot of people that say, men and women, I've seen your movies and I started studying martial arts. And I think that's a great thing, because I truly believe that everyone should know some sort of martial arts for self-defense, you know, to protect yourself or protect a loved one. And also that, to me, it's like one of the best forms of exercise, but at the same time, you're learning how to defend yourself. So I think, being a role model for that, I love that. I love that. And, a lot of people will say, I tell my daughter to watch her movies and this and that. And, you know, it's kind of like they say, you're like my daughter's role model, you know, and I love that, you know, because, you know, you've done a good job. It wasn't just all fun and games. You're doing something to help people.
Yeah. And let's not forget, I mean, you know, you were a big box office draw. Like, I think you and Don Wilson were like the people, you know, in that world. I mean, you must be very proud of that as well.
Yeah, you know, I am, because I remember there was Time magazine had Don Wilson, myself, and Andrew Stevens, actually. And saying we were the top video sellers of all time, you know, during that period, you know, and to be in Time magazine, and we're like, oh my God, right? So I think, I just really think that we're put on this earth to follow a specific path designed for us. And some of us find it and some of us don't. And I definitely think I found the path on what, you know, I should be doing in this life.
And I'm curious to know, who were the women who were sort of inspiring you when you were growing up? Who were your inspirations?
Well, you know, it's funny, because there weren't, like you said, a whole lot of women.
But I
do remember, and I have never had the opportunity to meet her, but Bo Sim Mark, who is Donnie Yen's mother, does wushu, I've read her book, and I've always like just kind of like I used to say, oh, I'm going to try to copy her uniform and her poses and this and that. And I knew she was in Boston, and that was like always kind of my dream, because she was like the only woman that I've really, you know, really knew and looked up to. So
Did you meet her?
I have never met her. Isn't that funny?
Okay.
No, I
haven't. That's interesting. Yeah.
And I think I told Donnie, I told him, I said, you know, your mother was my idol, you know, when I was growing up. And other than that, it was Jackie Chan. You know, I grew up watching Jackie Chan movies. So I wanted to emulate his moves and be like him.
When you were learning martial arts, you didn't experience any sexism towards you, or was it all quite a positive experience?
You know what? No, I mean, in general, it was. I felt when I was competing, and I always competed against the men in the weapons division. And in 1982, I was number one in the whole United States and North America on weapons. Yeah. And that was competing with the men. And that was something I thought, wow, really hard thing to do, because I felt like I couldn't be just as good as them. I had to be so much better and shine so much that I would get better scores, because I felt, of course, you know, some of the people still, you know, like I would get little comments saying, oh, that's because you have little diamonds on your uniform, you know, because I had a kung fu uniform. I'm going, I wish I had diamonds on. Right. And, you know, I was on Karate Illustrated, the first woman on there, and Renardo Barden was the editor, and he had a fight really hard to get me on. And he was told, you know, women and minorities wouldn't sell. And he fought and fought and put me on. And then I remember one of the competitors said to me, oh, how'd you get on the cover? Did you sleep with the editor? And I was like, no, why? Is that how you got on the cover?
Good one.
So, you know, a couple things here and there, and definitely in the movies that, you know, not in Hong Kong. I mean, Hong Kong embraced me and put me as a lead in all the movies. But in America, when I was starting out, it was like kind of, no, we can't have a woman lead. We have to have the man as the lead. You're the partner. And in the end, he comes and saves you. You know, you fight, but in the end, he comes and saves the day. And even though I did China O'Brien, which was one of my first English movies, was a huge hit worldwide, except America, you know, so gradually I had to change it until, you know, I started, you know, doing American movies where I was the lead. And then, the producers found, oh, wow, we can make money with her. So, you know, so I started getting more, it was breaking that a stigma that, you know, women in action, you know, can't sell.
There's a few movies of yours. I'm thinking Sworn to Justice is a really good one, where you're getting really decent characters. They're demanding of you from an acting sense as well. And your acting did, you know, it developed, didn't it, over the years in Hollywood, to a point where you felt quite accomplished then as a more rounded actor then, the longer you were doing it.
You know, when I did Sworn to Justice, that's when things started changing. You know, that Paul Maslick was like, you know what, we want to show you as a sexy woman, not just like, you know, the cop or the tomboy girl neighbor next door. We want to change your attitude, and we want to give you like a really a meaty part where you really have to study. And they sent me to an acting school, Ivana Chubbuck school, and take some acting lessons. And she was also working with me on the character. And I was working with people that I was in awe of, like Brad Dourif, you know, and Walter Koenig and Tony LoBianco. I mean, like, I'm not working with martial art actors. I'm working with an Academy Award winner, you know? Yeah. And I remember, like, I was so nervous to work with Brad. And when we did the scene, he kissed me on the cheek and he said that was an Oscar performance. And I, from that point on, I was just like, wow, you know, instead of being afraid to work with people that are so good, I can learn from them and they pull out better performances in me. And I think from that point on, something changed a little bit, especially in my mind about acting, that, you know, the acting role was just as important as the action.
You bastard! Come on then!
Well, I saw an advert for KFC on YouTube and it said it was 1983. So would that have been your first acting?
That was.
Is that right?
That was.
Yeah.
And I remember when they called me to do it, how that happened was, I was on the cover of Karate Illustrated magazine. and Kentucky Fried Chicken was looking for five people in the sports industry that were the best in their field. And they called me and they said, oh yeah, you're the best in martial arts here. So they said, we want you to do this Kentucky Fried Chicken. And at that time I was living in San Jose, California. And they're like, we're gonna fly you first class. I never flew first class. And I was like, oh, but I'm in San Jose. It was like a 40-minute flight. They didn't even have a first class, right? And then I remember, it was in the studio and I was in awe. I was like, the first time I was ever in a movie studio that they built the whole Kentucky Fried Chicken store.
Yeah, that was a whole set, because you sort of do, we should describe to people, you do a sort of karate chop and then you split the I think it's like a block, and then it's so hard it causes a split in the earth,
right?
That's what happens. The whole set separates.
And it's so funny because in 1983 they didn't have like the special effects, so yeah. They had this mechanical machine that pulled the blocks apart. They're like kind of amazing. You know, I mean, it doesn't look like real. It was really funny. And I remember they said, oh, we're gonna give you $200 to go have dinner. And I was like, $200, I'm going to go get a $10 pizza and I'm going to have $190 left.
That's amazing. So,
it's funny, too. I was so afraid I was going to forget my lines, right? And I would over them over a million times, you know, and almost like to this day, I still remember because I went over them so much.
I mean, did you have aspirations to get involved in films at that point, or was it just a fun thing to do?
At that time, I didn't. I didn't do my first film till 1985. So to me, it was like, oh my God. And I remember they like paid me, I think they paid me $15,000, right? And I was like, oh my God, I'm a millionaire now, you know? And I was like, and you know, even after that, I got a couple calls actually to do movies, but nothing really happened until I did Yes, Madam.
You were training in Kung Fu. You joined Ernie Reyes's demo team. You would tour around the world doing wushu. Is that right?
Well, what happened was I started off in Tung Sido. Then I went into Shaolin Kung Fu. Then I went into Eagle Claw Kung Fu. And then I was introduced to wushu. And I really, really wanted to learn wushu. And there was none of it anywhere. It was only on the West Coast. So I was competing. I was number one. I won like the first major tournament, took first place, and it was in New Jersey. And everybody's like, you need to travel and compete in all the number one, you know, the A-rated competitions. And there was one coming up in California. So I met George Chung and the West Coast demonstration team at one of the, I think in Chicago. And they're like, well, come out to California. And I planned on coming out just for a month. They set me up in an apartment, like a room right next to the studio. And I would go there and train. And then I met Roger Tung and I was training with him in Seattle. And also Ernie Reyes had the team then, and they were like, I was in awe of them. I'm like, oh my God, they're so good. They train so hard too. And then he said, you want to be on the team? And I was like, absolutely. So he was very innovative. He would study wushu from, Anthony Chan. He would learn the Eskrima sticks. He would learn like everything and put it into the demonstration. And we worked hard. I mean, he was really tough on us. And we traveled. Yeah, we traveled all over the place. I think, you know, even when I look back then, the precision and the movement back for that day was so awesome. You know, you're looking back then. Yeah.
There is footage you've put on your YouTube channel of you doing things like long fist form. Is that right? And I've seen a few different things and weapons forms.
Well, I went to China too.
China was sort of opening up early 80s, this is, isn't it? So you couldn't just go down the road and there was a wushu school. It was quite a specialist thing in America at the time. Is that right?
I mean, the only people that I knew in the entire United States doing it was Anthony Chan in San Francisco, you know, and I would go and train with him, and Roger Tung in Seattle. And I've seen them compete, and nobody had wushu here in the States at that time. So if you wanted to learn, you had to go to China, and China was not open to foreigners. I remember it took a lot of you know, visas and, you know, going through government documents and stuff to get in. And it was very, very strict. I remember when I went in there, they took my magazine away. I had an L magazine and they're like, oh, no, that's propaganda. You know, I mean, things were really, really tough back at that time. And when we went to Chengdu and went there for 8 weeks, and we went with about probably about 12 people. Roger took 12 of us. And one of my friends was Clarence, and he was 6'5", African-American. And we're in the mountains of China, and we would attract crowds every day because, number one, they've never seen anybody with blue eyes, because I have blue eyes, right?
Yeah.
And they've never seen an African-American person there because it wasn't time to go in. And we would practice on Sunday on our days off, like out in the area. And we would have, the first day we had about 60 people watching us. And the next Sunday we had about like 200. And then we had like 1,000 people like just watching us, and just, they were trying to stare at my eyes and look at him. And it was crazy, you know, back then, because China really wasn't open, and we had this special, you know, permission to come in.
Because this was sort of before even Jet Li was a big name. I mean, were you out there learning wushu then off people in China then, the masters in China?
Yes, yeah. Actually, Jet Li was current champion at the time. Yeah. He was in Beijing. I went to Chengdu. It's funny, I've never met Jet Li either. to this day, really? I haven't met him.
You must have met most of the legends, though, I'm guessing.
I have. I've met most of them. I'd have to say probably, you know, he's about the only one, maybe, that I haven't met.
You met Jackie Chan.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I was actually supposed to do a movie with him. I was supposed to do Armor of God. I was supposed to play the nemesis in that. And that's when he got hurt. And he couldn't film for, I guess, almost 2 years. And then Golden Harvest, I was contracted with them. And they said, okay, well, instead of doing Armor of God, we're going to put you in Righting Wrongs with Yuen Biao.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's the butterfly style.
Corey Yoon, Quay, and Seasonal Films are in the States. They're auditioning. They're looking for a new Bruce Lee. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep. They were looking.
Yeah.
They were looking for a guy to be the next Bruce Lee.
So they must have had what turned into Yes, Madam. They must have went out there with that film in mind, and that was going to be a sort of new Bruce Lee project. Is that right?
No, actually not. They did not have a mind, and they were here, they were just looking for the talent, and then they were trying to find someone and then build it around them. And I went down to Paul Maslick. He was the editor he was also the director of Sworn to Justice. He was the editor of Inside Kung Fu, and he called Ernie Reyes and said, hey, they're looking for a guy to be in this movie, to be like the next Bruce Lee. It's a Hong Kong company, and, you know, your guys are like one of the best around. You know, can you fly down and bring them down? The auditions are at Heal Cho School. And he said, what about the girls? And he was like, oh, yeah, well, you can bring them, but they're looking for a guy. So we all went down, and there were like hundreds of martial artists there. And Yuen Kuei was he was the main guy. I don't know who else was even there, but I just remember him. And he said, I want to go with the girl. So It's with seasonal films. So seasonal films signs me up. And I did something with Peter Jennings. You know, Peter Jennings was like one of the most famous newscasters. And they did a little thing on me being like, you know, number one and saying, look out, Hong Kong, here she comes. Well, seasonal films hasn't done anything with me. And now this is about a year, a little bit longer going by. And Sammo Hung sees World News Tonight in Hong Kong. And he calls up Yuen Kuei and he's like, who is this girl? Who's this girl that they're saying is coming to Hong Kong? And he said, oh yeah, she's contracted with seasonal films. And he's like, I want her. So they I actually did Yes, Madam, right? Because of Sammo seeing me. And then after I did Yes, Madam, seasonal film said, oh wow, that was a big hit. Let me put her in a film. And then I did No Surrender. But I always use that as, you know, a thing, you know, when people are, you know, acting or whatever, that maybe the producers might think, you know, you're not right for the part because you're not what they're looking for. But if you can go in there and blow their minds with what you do, whether it's martial arts or acting, you could change their minds.
And did Corey Yoon ever tell you what he saw in you at that audition to pick you? I mean, do you know why you stood out?
I think, no, he never told me why, but I think because I did some forms, I did some weapons, I did self-defense, and then I did some fighting. So I think he was just going, wow, you know, I've never seen like an American girl like this that could fight like that, you know?
I think and he must have known visually what that would have looked like for the film. Maybe that was it.
Well, He just said, yes, this girl, she could be a big star, right? And happened is when he went back and then they saw what I could do, then they came together with Yes, Madam, and DMB did it. And Michelle Yeoh was Dixon Poon's wife at that time. So he was looking for something to put his wife in a film, and they were like, yeah, let's put these two together. And then that's how the concept came up.
Yeah, I love the fact you and Michelle Yeoh started your careers on the same film. It's just it's just incredible. Corey Yoon, just quickly, obviously you guys must have worked well together because, you know, he's casting you a lot in his projects in Hong Kong. I mean, what was that working relationship like with him?
You know, to this day, he's still one of my favorites to work with, a director. And I would love, absolutely, if you said to me right now, who would you like to do a movie with? I would love to do another movie with him. He would be like on my top list. And because he's just a genius for action. I really don't think it gets any better than him. And he was tough. He was very tough. He didn't speak English, but he would try to be nice to me. But I remember, like, especially in Yes, Madam, the first scene I did was the airport scene, and I'm fighting Eddie Mayer. And I was doing an elbow to him, and Yuen Kuei kept saying, harder, harder, harder. He learned the word harder for English. Yeah. That's when he knew harder. And Eddie is in my ear going, no, please, not so hard. I can't take it. And I was like going, oh my God, what do I do? Who do I listen to?
He must have known your strengths as well, though. And he knew how to use you properly to show you off, you know, in the moves that you could do. So
absolutely. And he knew that I was tough. I would do whatever he said. And if I couldn't get it, I would just work on it until I got it. You know, I've got hurt many times on his films. And I remember one time I got hit in the nose, like we were doing I think it was in Yes, Madam, and this guy was it the chain or it was a sword. He turned around and hit, when I'm doing the ending fight scene with all those guys with weapons, which it gets really dangerous, you know, when you have all these weapons coming at you really fast, because doesn't only takes a second of someone being off to get hit. And I got hit in the nose, and my nose swelled up and my eyes were tearing. And he comes over to me and he looks at me and he goes, oh, your nose looks better now. And I was like, thanks, you know, but very good, good working relationship.
There was never a point then where you were like, what have I signed up for here? This is too much.
Oh, yes, there were many points. Okay. Not on that film, but I think after I did Lady Reporter, right?
Yeah.
There were like a couple like hairy scenes in that, and I got hurt like so bad in that you're thinking, oh my god, the next one I'm gonna die, because on the next one I remember Mong Hoi was telling me, okay, we're gonna have you jump from this high rise building, but there's not gonna be any airbag because I want to show it that there's nothing there. And I was panicking then, and I wasn't even doing the movie yet, right? And then Golden Harvest said, oh, we want you to do China O'Brien. And I'm like, China O'Brien, and then like in English and in Utah. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm not gonna have to do that like 25 story building, you know, that high rise.
Was there a stunt that you ever said no to?
No. I've always tried everything they said. Wow. But okay. There were some of them that I thought, oh my god, I could die on this.
The level of realism is in there is it's quite extreme, isn't it? Even to this day, amazing to watch, but it's full contact, and what you see, there's no trickery there, is there really? You know,
no, you're getting hit. And I mean, one of the things I remember, we were shooting Lady Reporter, and I had to come around a corner, and I knew I was going to get hit in the face. And I don't remember if it was with a foot or a stick, but I couldn't even blink or flinch, you know, and that's, you're really getting hit in the face. You know, I mean, it was brutal. You had to be really, really a tough person and take a lot of physical pain.
He destroyed our clan. He's so cruel. He killed all my friends. I had to kill him.
When you went out there then, you knew Jackie Chan films, you knew the Bruce Lee movies, the Kung Fu movies, so you knew of Hong Kong action cinema. I mean, you were aware of the films, is that right?
Yeah, because when I was studying with Shum Leung in New York, I was studying Eagle Claw, and I would drive from Scranton to New York, which is about 2.5 hours, every Sunday, train with him. Then he would take us to Chinatown to have dinner and watch a Hong Kong movie. So that's where I started seeing the Jackie Chan movies. That's when I knew who Jackie Chan was, and seeing like all those kind of period films. They were all period films, actually. None of them were modern. Yeah. I went to do Yes, Madam. I thought I was doing a period film. I didn't even know. I didn't know what to expect. I thought they were going to put black braids on me, and I was going to be, I was going to be Asian. You know? I had no idea. And I was so shocked when they said, no, your name is Cindy and you're an inspector from England. And I went, oh my God, and I wear regular clothes. And I was kind of bummed out because I love the outfits, you know, they like Kung Fu uniforms, you know, and I wanted to wear that so bad instead of jeans and a jean jacket.
But nothing could have prepared you for what the type of films that you were making. There was no sort of reference point for you at that stage when you started doing Yes, Madam.
Oh no, I knew nothing other than the Kentucky Fried Chicken about filming action, you know, about saying a lot of lines in a movie, you know, and it was kind of, I always say it was the greatest place for me to learn, because we never had a script. They'd give you your lines while you were there. And sometimes you wouldn't even know what's going on in the scene. Like I was doing Magic Crystal, and the director said, look up at the ceiling. And I'm like, what am I looking at? And he goes, just look at the ceiling, right? So I'm looking at the ceiling, and there's little holes in the wall, and I'm counting the holes. I don't know what I'm thinking, right? And then I see the movie, and I see I'm looking at aliens invading the Earth, and I'm going, oh my God. Now, don't you think that would have been a little important information to tell me?
You'd been to Hong Kong before on your sort of wushu travels.
Yes, I went to Hong Kong with my Eagle Claw teacher, and I remember he would take us to the head of the Yingjiao Pai Association, and I remember we'd be in their apartments, and they'd move all the furniture, and they'd say, okay, do your form.
Right,
that was like, quite common. I'm like, what, right here in this little space, you know? And they're like, yeah, you know? So I went there for training prior, but I really didn't get to experience too much, because it was all, like I said, back in that day, all I was focused on was training. That was it. That's all I wanted to do.
But when you were living there, obviously, you know, I'm guessing, you know, you had your favorite restaurants you'd go to, and then you had, you know, I don't know, a local gym that you'd go to. I mean, you were living out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember the first day I went, they put me in a Holiday Inn, and there was a monsoon. And for 3 days, I could not leave the hotel. I couldn't talk to anybody. I didn't talk to anybody from the film. I remember I had a book. I had Taipan, that book, and I was reading that. And it's so thick, you know, if you know what it is. I read it like in a day. On the TV, there was nothing on English until like about one movie would come on at night or something, and that was it. And I was like, I couldn't leave the room. And it wasn't a nice Holiday Inn. It was a really old one. There was nothing there, you know. And I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here? You know, and then once after the 3 days passed, and then people started coming around and we started getting ready for the film. But that was like, welcome to Hong Kong.
Well, did you have many friends then? Because I know, well, there's always been a tradition in Hong Kong cinema of the Guaylo, the white actor that goes out there, usually plays a villain and gets beaten up. But did you know people when you were out there? Did you make friends at all?
Well, I knew no one, and I didn't know what to expect. I'm in the plane, and I'm thinking I'm going to Han's Island, you know, from Enter the Dragon. I had no idea what to expect at all. And one of the first people I met was Amy Chin, who was or Amy Chow. She was Raymond Chow's daughter, and she was one of the producers on this film. And she spoke English, and she was the only one at that point that spoke English to me. So we kind of like became like friends. And then I met Michelle really early on. You know, we were doing Yes, Madam. And then she became friends with me. And then, you know, then I met.
She was Michelle Khan then, is that right?
No, she was actually Chu King Yo. That's
Okay.
Yo Chu King. That was what she was called, and then she changed it. But when I knew her, it was Chu King. We became really, really good friends. So we hung out pretty much all the time, and then we would, you know, her husband was Dixon, you know, and then we would go to dinner, and then, you know, and then gradually you meet, you know, people, mostly the people that could speak a little bit of English. Like, it was funny. Yeah. Like, Yun Biu didn't speak English, right? When I did the movie, and you're kind of like, hi. And you had to communicate all through action.
But then over time, Steve Tartaglia, Vincent Lin, Jeff Falcon, these sort of guys start appearing in Hong Kong action films. Did you become quite chummy with those guys as well? I know you worked with quite a few of them.
Yeah, I have. Actually, Vincent Lin is one of my best friends. Conan Lee, you know, came on.
Yeah.
And then they would, Richard Norton, of course, was there. Yeah. And that's when I became friends with Richard, you know. So I think all the American actors, you know, we all kind of like, oh my God, hey, yeah. You know, because I remember going to dinner and everybody would speak Cantonese, and I never knew what. I would just sit there the whole time and just eat, right? And then I said, okay, well, I'm going to study Chinese because I'm going with all these people. I don't know anything they're saying. And they're like, okay, we'll do Mandarin because it's easier. Well, that didn't help because everybody spoke Cantonese. So then I tried after about a year, then I started doing Cantonese, you know, which was a much harder language to do. They never could understand me anyway. And I sort of just got by like with like hand signals and
hand signals. Yeah.
Yeah.
But didn't Yen Kuei, he used to use you a lot for the translating for some of the other actors, because after a few films, I guess, you got used to how things worked, I suppose.
Right. And it wasn't so much because of the dialogue. It's just that I knew him well, that I knew what he wanted, right? So I could portray it to the actors that were there.
And when you were on set, because you've got that direct experience between working on a Hong Kong set and then working in Hollywood, did it feel equal?
Yeah, I mean, they never ever said, oh, you're a girl, you can't do this. It was always like it was 100% totally equal as far as the fighting goes. I wasn't like treated any different than anybody else. And it was good because that added to making me a much stronger person.
And working with Sammo, we should say, obviously, Millionaire's Express or Shanghai Express, you got that great fight scene with Sammo. Mm-hmm. Was that intimidating working with him? He's quite, when he's directing, he's the boss, isn't he? Everyone looks up to Sammo.
Very much. Yeah. Yes, it was very intimidating for me because I just knew him slightly in Yes, Madam. I think he had a very small part, right?
He did. Yeah,
I wasn't in that part, but I knew he was the one that got me over there. So I really didn't get to know him until we were doing Shanghai Express. Yeah. There's my dog again. Basically on that movie, everybody was telling me, oh, you know, we feel sorry for you fighting with Sammo because he's really strong and he really hurts people. So I was a little bit nervous about fighting him because he was a big guy, and that's even the stunt people were telling me they didn't like to fight with us. But
wow, really?
But once, you know, we got in a working relationship, you know, it worked. It was really good. Then I wasn't intimidated because I knew he was also an incredible director as well.
Hong Kong is obviously, you have a lot of affection for Hong Kong. Is it a place that you've been back to on your travels? Do you go there quite a bit still?
You know, I haven't been back actually since 92. I've been there on a stopover from airport, and I was like, wow, my God, the airport is so different. And they're like, well, you wouldn't believe how Hong Kong has changed since then. So I would totally love to go back, you know. But most of my friends and everybody that I worked with in the film industry, they're not in Hong Kong now. Who knows? They're all like all over the place. So I wouldn't even know like who to contact if I went there to see who was still there.
I know who you are, you bastard. Your time has come, then your son.
Were you ready to leave then? Because you'd been there for 3 years. I've got 7 Hong Kong films during that time. So, you know, that's quite a lot of work to do in quite a short space of time. So were you eager to get out of there?
You know, I wasn't. I mean, I was eager to do when I was doing China O'Brien, right? Like Sylvester Stallone called me and wanted me to do a movie with him called The Executioner, which never went. Yeah. But anyway, I was thinking, wow, this is great. I mean, I loved Hong Kong. I love the action. But at the same time, I missed, you know, I missed being in America. I missed my mom. Everything was different then. I remember like when I would come home, like it would be so awesome just to drive my car. I was like, oh my God, I haven't driven in a year. And just going into the supermarkets, you know, like over there, at that time, the supermarkets were like a big 7-Eleven and you'd have like maybe 3 boxes of cereal. And I just remember like going, oh my God, look at this. There's a whole line of cereal boxes, you know? So, you know, little things like that, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, when I look back at it, you know, if I probably stayed in Hong Kong, I probably would have had, you know, a little bit probably escalation in my movies or what I would have done. But, you know, I would love to go back, but I don't even know like what the film industry is there now, you know, who's doing movies, what companies there. but at some point I would really love to work with Corey Yoon and get back into that kind of action because I do
believe
that is the best. And, you know, yes, we're a lot older, but you know, in my mind, I even in my body, I still can do that type of action.
Yeah. And, gotcha. Well, I've seen your recent movies. You can definitely still, you still got the moves.
Yeah. But you know, it's not the same, even the, you know, the American movies. And number one reason is, you know, we did Yes, Madam. That was a 7.5 month shoot. I mean, unless you're doing like, you know, Wonder Woman and you have $150 million budget, you know, most of the movies I do are shot within, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. So you don't have that luxury and time to really, or the budget to focus on that type of action.
That must have been quite an adjustment, I'm guessing, Cynthia, once you started working in Hollywood with directors that didn't really know how to direct action. That must have been, was that ever frustrating?
Yes, it was very frustrating because remember, I'm used to all this like Hong Kong action and it was like, oh my God, I'm shooting American movies. I don't have to even wear a pad on me, you know? And when I was shooting Hong Kong, my wardrobe was always like, can I put pads on my arms and put them on my shins, you know? And it was like, I don't have to even wear a pad like this, you know? To me, it was like, oh, okay, that's kind of awesome, right? I could wear tighter fitting clothing. But when I came back to, the stunt people were telling me, don't hit them so hard. And I'm like, but I was so used to hitting hard. And that was one of the things I had to really do is, you know, not hit. I mean, even they didn't even really want me to touch. And I was like, but I like to touch a little bit so you feel it. Because if I'm fighting with someone and they're punching me, say like, you know, I'd like to get tapped a little bit in the body so I can react much better. Because if you don't see it coming, you know, it's like, not. And so that was a big adjustment for me, is to change the way I was fighting. And then, you know, some of them would just not cut it the way they cut it in Hong Kong. I tried to get Corey Yoon to be the action director in Puerto Rico. It was called Outside the Law. And I was saying, can I get him? And they're like, well, yes, if we can afford him. And I remember I called him and Corey Yoon was like, oh, my salary is more than the budget of your movie. And I was like, okay. I think he was working with Jet Li at the time. And he told me, he said, just look at Yes Man and just copy the scene.
Is that what he said?
That's what he said. And I was like, well, that's not easy, because the other people that I'm working with can't do the other parts.
Would you try and suggest on some of those sets, you know, how about you film from here? Or was it just not, that was just not the way?
Sometimes. You know, I try to work with choreographers that kind of know my action. And even though maybe the action isn't as complicated because they don't have the time to do it, or the stunt people, if something looked funny, I might say, maybe you want to shoot it from this side, but pretty much, you know, pretty much the everybody was pretty good with, you know, angles and what we were doing and shooting.
Just on that point with Sylvester Stallone, did you meet with Stallone at any point during that process with that movie? How far did that get?
Yeah, I did. I was shooting China O'Brien, and I remember I came in, it was 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm with Richard Norton, and I have this, we always would go to the desk and say any messages, and I have a message called William Friedkin. And I looked at Richard and I said, you write this? And he's like, what? I said, call William Friedkin, you know, and he's like, no. So it's 2 a.m, so I can't call. So I wait the next morning and I call and I'm like, is William Friedkin there, you know, because I thought someone's was pulling a gag on me, right?
Sure.
Because I knew him from The Exorcist and Live and Die in LA, Cruising, all these movies. And he goes, yeah, this is William Friedkin. And he goes, I'm directing a movie with Sylvester Stallone, and we would like to have a meeting with you of putting you in as the co-star. And he's going, Cynthia, I'm talking about the co-star. Now I'm like almost fainting, right? Wow. And I'm like, well, I'm shooting China O'Brien, and I shoot every day except Sunday. And he's like, well, we're going to fly you in next Sunday. So he picked me up at the airport. He goes, we're going to meet Sylvester Stallone. Joel Silver was producing, who was a big producer at the time. And the guys that were writing the script were from RoboCop. You know, they wrote RoboCop. Mm. So this is an incredible team. I go in, I meet Stallone. I'm sitting out there. They said, can you sit outside for a while? And they come in and they said, here's a contract. We're signing you up. They paid me more than I've ever been paid in my life to do this movie, because at that time it was pay or play. And Stallone says, I'll take you back to the airport. So we were talking, and I go back and I shoot China O'Brien, and I'm like in a fog. I'm going, oh my God, I just signed a contract to go with Sylvester Stallone, right?
Yeah.
And I finished China O'Brien, and I come back and I go to the office and I meet with the writers and William Friedkin, and William Friedkin grabs the script, throws it on the desk. He goes, this is shit. He goes, Cynthia, if you have something else to do, go do it. And I was like, oh, do you mean that this might not happen, this movie? And he goes, that's right. I'm not going to direct this. And the whole project fell apart.
Oh, no. What a shame.
Yeah. So then and Sylvester Stallone's company called me and they said, we want to sign you for 3 movies. And they offered me a little bit more money. And now I'm thinking, okay, this is at White Eagle. And I'm going, all right, it's resurfaced. Oh my God. Right. And at this point now I moved to LA. I'm living in Beverly Hills. Right. And then Golden Harvest wanted me to do China O'Brien 3 and 4, which I wanted to do. And at that time they put me with ICM, with Stallone's agent, and Stallone and his attorney and ICM said, no, you can't do that, but I want to do it. No, you can't do Hong Kong movies. That was their thing. And I think that was probably the biggest mistake I've ever done, is not doing that, because I'm like, oh my God, okay, well, I'm going to be doing this Stallone movies. I got to listen to what they say. And then that never went either, because he got offers, I think, to do more Rambos and more Rockies, and everything just kind of went away then.
And did you know what sort of scripts they wanted to sort of send your way?
No, but I know he was doing that movie with Kurt Russell. It was a buddy movie. I remember him telling the director, saying, can I use Cynthia as the partner in this one? And the director said no. So he tried on that one.
Was that Tango and Cash?
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. That was it. And yeah, he was telling me he tried to get in on it. And then I don't know what happened. I think, like agents are crazy. And to me, it's not about the money. I would have done it for free. You know, I would have done it for free with Stallone. Like, and I still would. But they were like, well, since he wasn't going to, his company folded and he was going to do this other stuff. And my agent was like, well, you still got to pay her the rest of the money. And I was like, no, you know, it's more than I ever got. And they just, agents did it. I think what ended up happening is that I never heard from Stallone again. And I think it was probably because of that, which was totally not my fault, but I haven't seen him nor spoke to him since that day.
Wow. Well, I mean, do you have any regrets then about any of that, or just sort of signing with the agent? But what else would you have done if you've been offered that situation? Of course you sign with the agent. You do what they say, because that's the next logical step.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm shooting a movie with Sylvester Stallone as a partner, you know?
Yeah.
The Executioner was like a buddy film. It was like kind of like Tango and Cash, but we were buddies. And he wanted to do everything by the book, and I was crazy and didn't want to, wanted to do all these, other crazy things, kind of like Irresistible Force a bit. But you know what? I look at it this way. Do I wish I would have done China O'Brien 3 and 4? Absolutely. Nothing really came of it being with a big agency, but your life is whatever happened with my life today might not be the same if I would have done that.
Yeah.
And who knows? I always look at it this way. Like maybe I might not have had my daughter, maybe I would have been taking another path. So I don't have regrets, but I just know my life probably would have been a little bit different if I made different decisions. But I think that's life. Everybody does that. You make your decisions, and some are right and some are wrong, and some you learn from, and some, you just move on from.
You help me and we'll split the money.
And then you sort of worked quite solidly then in the low budget world. But as we say, a very lucrative industry as well, that sort of straight to video scene. And China O'Brien was a huge hit. I remember seeing that growing up, and it was a big movie.
And we're loving work. We're working. I was working like nonstop. And, it's not like you're in an A movie. I think, just one, like Charlize Theron, which she makes in one movie, probably all of us martial artists that have done independent films can't even get as much as that. But it was a great living, and the main thing is that we loved what we were doing, like loved going to your job and like, how cool is this? I'm working on a movie and this is how I'm making my living,
Yeah, absolutely. And working with good buddies. I mean, I know you did a lot of movies with Richard Norton. I've spoken to Richard Norton on this show, and just such a sweet guy, lovely guy. You're still in touch with Richard? Yes. Is he a good buddy? Yeah.
Yes. He's living in Australia at the moment, so I haven't seen him like too much because he's been spending a lot of time there. But we're still good friends, and I've done a lot of movies with Don Wilson, and he's one of my best friends. And I'm scheduled to do one with Vincent Lin in the future. A lot of people I've worked with have become like not just my good friends, but my best friends,
You've got to get Richards back in for China O'Brien 3. I think that's what's that's what needs to happen.
I did the interview with Scott Adkins, and he said he would love to do it.
Well, there you go.
And I said, I'm holding you to it.
Looking back, you must be immensely proud of the work that you've done, particularly in Hong Kong, during those years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they were definitely my best fight scenes. You know, that's why I said I would love to do that again, like do one now. I mean, and I think how cool would that be, you know, after what, 30 years or something, and you still can do it and you're still looking pretty good, you know, and you could have like a little bit more, you know, come up with a good Hong Kong script, you know, more like as you got older, you know.
Would you ever like produce your own films, maybe, Cynthia? Would you look to do that?
I don't know. You know what? I probably, I just love life. I love spending time with my daughter. I love spending time with my animals. You know, I love spending time with my mom who recently passed. And I love traveling and I love doing adventure and I love doing movies. But I think if I would have focused just on the movie industry, you know, and I love teaching, I love going out and teaching, you know. So like I said, it's not... I think all the time and energy that I would put into that, that would make me focus just completely on that I've never really went that route, which would have kept me in here. I probably could have done my more projects, but that's probably one of the things I probably think, you know, yeah, you should have done that. You should have done it. But I'm just so happy with life and in general that I love what I'm doing that I kind of let, you know, it, whatever happens is going to happen instead of, you know, I guess one of the biggest things that probably I don't do is I'm not like, I'm going to go and make this happen. I'm going to go do this, which I'm going to do in my comic book. But, you know, I remember Matthias Hughes told me that he said he hated weekends because he couldn't meet with people and concentrate on work, you know? Yeah. And I was kind of like, wow, I don't want to get like that. You know, I don't want to be like that. I want to enjoy every day to, you know, whatever, even if it's just going out and taking a bicycle ride or something. So, you know, I think maybe if I put my mind to it one of these days and really try to get something going that I want, I could do that. You know, it's just putting, you know, the time and the effort into it.
Cynthia, look, you remain an inspiration to so many people as well, and someone who really sort of broke new ground in many ways. I mean, that's what an amazing legacy to have left behind, you know. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I go to all these events and I get these lifetime achievement awards, and I get them from like events that aren't martial artists, you know, and I'm up there and I'm like bewildered going, I'm just starting though, you know, in my mind it's like, I still have so much more to do. But when you look back at it and you really think about, you know, all that I've done and I'm still doing it. And I feel blessed. I really do.
Cynthia Rothrock, thank you so much. This has been really great to chat. Let's not leave it 10 years next time.
Yeah, right. 10 years from now, be like, oh my God.
You have a lovely day.
Okay, you too.
Cynthia Rothrock on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. What a joy that was to catch up with Cynthia Rothrock, an absolute legend of the martial arts world, and someone whose career I have followed from a very, very early age. I was probably watching Cynthia's films way before I should have been. I was trying to think of the first film of hers that I ever saw. I think it may have been China O'Brien or No Retreat, No Surrender 2. I definitely remember having both of those on VHS. And God, I used to watch those films a lot growing up, over and over. She's great. Look, we mentioned a few things there that I thought I would pick up on. So that KFC advert, which is hilarious. And if you haven't seen it, then do go on YouTube and check it out. I'll be sure to put a link to that in the description. Richard Norton, I've chatted to Richard Norton for this podcast. Cynthia and Richard made so many films together. They were affectionately called the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers of martial arts movies, which is a quote that I very much like. Richard appeared on episode 54 of this show, so go back and check that out. If you're a fan of No Retreat, No Surrender 2, then definitely check out my conversations with its other stars, as well as Cynthia. Lauren Avedon is on episode 57, and also Matthias Hughes. who is the villain in No Retreat, No Surrender 2. Matthias was on episode 21 of this podcast. Alas, Michelle Yeoh has so far not been on the podcast, but hey, who knows? Maybe down the line. She's got a few movies coming out, Shang-Chi or Gunpowder Milkshake, and she's in the Avatar sequels. Who knows? Maybe Cynthia can put in a good word. Listen, Cynthia's films are quite widely available. You might need to investigate a little bit to pick up her Hong Kong work, at least to get decent copies. But a lot of her American films are out there on the streaming platforms. Head over to kungfumovieguide.com to read my first interview that I did with Cynthia. And you can also read plenty of reviews of her many, many martial arts movies. Stay up to date with all the latest Cynthia Rothrock information via her website, cynthiarothrockofficial.com. Also, check her out on Instagram. Her name there is @officialcynthiarothrock. She's on Facebook, facebook.com/cynthiarothrock. She's on Twitter, @sinroth. And check out her excellent YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is called Cynthia Rothrock Channel. And again, I will be sure to put all of those links in the description of this podcast. And I think that is about it for today. I do hope that you have enjoyed listening to that conversation with the great Cynthia Rothrock. If you did, then please do feel free to share it, like it, leave a review, write a comment. Whatever you can do to help to spread the word of the show is very much appreciated. All that remains for me to say is a huge thank you to Cynthia for talking to me, and a huge thank you to you, the loyal Foo follower, who has listened to this episode all the way to the very end. Thank you so much. I will be back in 2 weeks' time with another brand new episode of the show. In the meantime, stay safe, stay well, and I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.